again, we'd like to turn to Genesis 22. This morning we read the first 19 verses. We want to take our thoughts from those 19 verses again, but for sake of time, we'll read verses 1 through 5. It came to pass after these things that God did tempt or test Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, he said, Behold, here I am. He said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went into the place, unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes, and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and come again unto you. Again, in verses 1 and 2, God is seen speaking to Abraham, telling him to offer his son Isaac as a burnt offering in the place that God would specify in the land of Moriah. In verse 3, Abraham rises early in the morning, begins to make preparation for what God had told him, took two of his servants, or young men, and took Isaac, and they head for Moriah. In verse 5, Abraham arrived at the place where God was directing him, and Abraham says to his servants, I and the lad will go yonder and worship. And from those words, we see that Abraham understood that what God had commanded him to do was an act of worship. And we want to view it in that way this evening. We want to just look at Abraham worshiping God. There's much we learn here about our own means of worship. First of all, briefly, what is worship? The masses that make up professing Christianity have bought into so many superficial ideas concerning worship that almost everything that is called worship today is anything but. The superficial idea of worship, you combine that with man's depravity, combine that with a postmodern society and a culture of godlessness and a culture of humanism, relativism, and pragmatism and all kinds of other isms. And the end result, of course, is there is a great deal of ignorance concerning what constitutes true worship. And sadly, what constitutes worship in the minds of most is so far removed from the biblical pattern of worship. And what is called worship today really is a sham, and it's blasphemous. True worship has been degraded to something that it never was intended to be, and it's been degraded into basically just a mere fleshly exercise, a mere carnal exercise. And you take the blasphemous views of the worshipped, that is God, and you take the blasphemous views of the worshiper, that is man, and worship has been cheapened to a man-centered, man-focused event rather than a God-centered, God-focused activity. The Bible makes it very clear that worship is more than formality. God condemns formality. It's more than lip service. God condemns it. It's more than religious performance. It's more than all these things. The principal word for worship in the Old Testament is shakaha, meaning simply to bow down. To bow down. You cannot worship without bowing down, and I'm not speaking physically. To worship is to bow down. The Old Testament idea is that of a reverence of mind and body. The principal New Testament word is proskuneo, meaning simply to do reverence by prostration. To do reverence by prostration. Again, you have the idea of reverence. You have the idea of bowing down. So both the Old and New Testament words speaks of an act of reverence that includes a bowing down. The word worship itself comes from the old Anglo-Saxon word worship. Worship. That is, in other words, worship is to declare God's worth. Is to declare His worth. It is an ascription of worth to God. And this is what the psalmist had in mind in Psalm 29:2 and Psalm 96, verse 8. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto His name. That's worship. We are to render God the glory, the honor, and the submission, which are His due. Not that which we feel like giving Him, but we are to render unto Him His due. That cannot be fully done. Nor do we fully comprehend that. Who can fully comprehend what God is due? We can't. And we certainly are unable to do it. So, to worship God is a reverential act of submission and homage before God in response to His glorious revelation of Himself. And it must always be in accordance with His will. It does not matter how impressive so-called worship may appear. It does not matter how good it may make an individual feel. If it is not according to God's will, it is not true worship. There's no getting around that. Doesn't matter what it looks like. Doesn't matter how wonderful it makes someone feel. To worship God is a drawing near to God. You cannot worship God without drawing near to God. But it's not only drawing near to God, it's drawing near to God on the terms that He proposes. That's the only way we can draw near to God. And in the way that He makes it possible. And there's only one possible way to draw near to God, and that's through Christ. True worship involves a thinking, a meditating, a reflecting, and a processing of what God has revealed to us of Himself. It is the overflow of a grateful heart under the sense, under the presence of His divine favor. To worship God involves a vivid realization of who God is. It is a vivid realization of His presence. So in worship, there is a vivid realization that you are in the presence of God. And when you realize that who God is, when you have a vivid realization of who God is, and you're in His presence, there's only one thing you can do, and that's bow. And again, I'm not speaking of a physical bowing. Speaking of a bowing of soul. To worship God involves an agreement and a conformity to God. It's a conscious awareness of God. Again, it's a heart overflowing with reverence. It's a heart overflowing with godly desires. It involves humility of spirit. It involves love to God. It involves faith in God. Praise for God. Thanksgiving to God. Commitment to God. Surrender to God. All of these are included in worship. So just from that, we see that true worship is a life-renewing, life-impacting event. If it does not renew us, if it does not impact our life, we have not worshiped. We have not worshiped. So let's look, with all that in mind, we want to look at Abraham as an example in worship. Because again, in verse 5, it's very obvious that what God told him to do back in verse 2, that Abraham considered it as an act of worship. So we want to look at Abraham's act of worship. The actual act takes place in verses 9 through verse 14. But much is said leading up to the actual act of worship. In fact, more is said leading up to the act of worship than is said about the actual act of worship. So let's consider prior to the act of worship. Let's see what Abraham did. First of all, there was an awareness of God. We're speaking of prior to worship. Prior to worship, prior to the actual act of worship of Abraham, there was a relationship with God. We saw that this morning. We're not going to rehash that. But in verses 1 and 2, God speaks directly to Abraham. And he said unto him, Abraham. It was personal. It was personal. The response of Abraham was, behold, here I am. And that reveals several things. It reveals that Abraham was aware at that very moment of the presence of God. Not only must you be aware of the presence of God during the act of worship, you're not going to worship unless prior to worship you are aware of the presence of God. We see also that Abraham, that response of Abraham, behold, here I am, it shows that Abraham was sensitive. He was sensitive to the voice of God. So there was contact between God and Abraham. There was an interaction between God and Abraham. God had the full attention of Abraham. God must have our attention prior to worship if we're going to worship Him. You cannot just ignore God all week and come into the house of God and then suddenly pay attention. It doesn't work that way. God must have our attention if we're going to worship. And be sure of this, God will not be worshipped without our attention upon Him. Now from Abraham's response, behold, here I am, we see that Abraham possessed a willingness and a readiness of spirit. There was a spirit of submission to God. There was a desire to please God. It's like, here I am, Lord, what do you want? There was a desire, or what can I do? There was a desire to please God. There was also a desire to further hear from God. Abraham, here I am. In other words, speak on, Lord. He had a desire to hear from God. All of these things are absolutely necessary prior to worship. We see also that he was available to God. He took his place before God. From verse 1, we see that Abraham's heart was affected and stirred by God. Abraham. And his immediate response is, behold, here I am. His heart was immediately affected. His heart was immediately stirred. All of this is prior to the actual act of worship. You cannot go through the week and be unaffected and unstirred by God, and then just turn that on at a certain hour. Doesn't happen. Secondly, there was a revelation from God. Again, we're speaking of prior to the actual act of worship. In verse 2, God makes known to Abraham what he wanted him to do. He gave instruction to Abraham. And God's instruction to Abraham was contrary to Abraham's natural feelings and natural affections. Offer up your son Isaac. So his instruction is contrary to the natural feelings and affections of man. His instruction to Abraham was unlike anything that the world would ever tell Abraham to do. So in verse 2, we have the word and will of God revealed prior to the actual act of worship. Again, worship must be in accordance with the word and the will of God. Prior to and the actual act itself. Thirdly, we see that there was personal preparation. In verse 3, we see that before Abraham left to worship, before he left his tent, he saddled his donkey, he gathered Isaac, he split the wood, he gathered the wood, no doubt took his knife, no doubt he took a cord to bind Isaac, and he took the means of starting a fire. He was preparing. He was making arrangements. He was getting ready to leave. He was getting ready to go to the place that God had appointed. And he is going there to worship. He's not just going there to offer his son. He is going there to worship. Prior to worship, there must be a preparation to be where God would have us be. So Abraham is making preparation to get to that place. Abraham's preparation corresponded to what God would have him to do. As he did those things in verse 3, he was focused upon the desires of God. And leading up to worship, one must be focused upon the desires of God. All the preparations in verse 3 was with the intent and with the purpose of obeying God. No one accidentally worships God. It's with purpose. It's with intent. Abraham's preparation, no doubt, involved great thought upon what he was about to do. As he was preparing his mule, I believe he did so with great thought of what was at hand. And how did Abraham view what was at hand? It was worship, according to verse 5. As he split the wood, he did so with great thought of what was at hand. As he gathered the split wood, he did so with great thought. As he took his knife, he did so with great thought. As he took a cord, and as he took the means of starting a fire, he did all of these things with great thought of what he was about to do or what was at hand. And then he gathered Isaac. And again, he did so with great thought. None of these things, in your wildest imagination, can you possibly believe that any of these things were done mindlessly when you consider what was at hand. There was great thought going into all of these things. Again, prior to the worship of God, one cannot be oblivious to God. You cannot be mindless of God and then just turn a switch on and worship. Abraham's preparation, no doubt, involved deep thought. Just preparing the mule, considering what is at hand, it was deep thought, deep meditation upon God, upon God's goodness. God had been so good to Abraham. Upon God's faithfulness. And yet how many today, in their so-called preparation for worship, never even stop and think of God's goodness and His faithfulness toward them? I believe as Abraham was doing all of these things in verse 3, that he was absorbed with God. He was absorbed with the matter that was before him. Offer your son. And really nothing else mattered that morning. When Abraham got up that morning in verse 3 and did all of these things, it was as if nothing else mattered. He was consumed with this one thing. And again, from verse 5, we see that he views what God would have him to do as an act of worship. Again, in all worship of God, we must be absorbed with God. Our focus must be upon God. It's amazing. People will say they worshiped and they didn't even focus. They didn't even think about God. Well, how can that be worship? He was absorbed. This is prior to the actual act. So Abraham's preparation involved a rising above self. When that voice came, Abraham, and Abraham knew that voice, he knew it was God. And then God told him, I want you to offer your son Isaac, whom thou lovest. I want you to offer him as a burnt offering. Abraham had to get beyond himself to properly respond to that. In all preparation of worship, there has to be a rising above self. There has to be a rising above self-interest. Again, all the promises of God to Abraham are linked to Isaac. Isaac is Abraham's future. And Abraham must rise above all self-interest. He must rise above all self-ways and concerns. He must rise above all of his own plans. And this is prior to worship. He had to overcome all fleshly inclinations. Because it is not your fleshly inclination to offer your son as a sacrifice. Prior to the worship of God and in the act of worship, self must be overcome. Self must be overcome all through the week. And then on your way to the house of God, self must be overcome. All through the act of worship, self must be overcome. So there was preparation. Fourthly, there was obedience. Again, we're looking at prior to the worship. We read in verse 3, and went into the place of which God had told him. Where do you think Abraham's mind and heart was when he left his residence that morning? And went into the place that God had told him. So we see Abraham and Isaac. They're leaving. And where is Abraham's mind? I believe his mind's on God. Where is Abraham's focus? Where is his heart? Is his heart back at his residence? No. His heart's upon God. His mind and heart was upon God and the matter at hand, which was worship. Again, and went to the place of which God had told him. He is now with heart and mind absorbed with God, obediently following God. And I don't believe that Abraham left his residence that morning with a feeling of dread. I don't believe that was the case at all. But I believe that Abraham left his residence that morning eagerly. He left his residence that morning with anticipation. He didn't know what God was going to do, but he knew God. And he knew God was faithful. And he knew what God had promised. So he left that morning with great anticipation. I believe he left that morning feeling privileged and blessed of God. He left that morning with a heart filled with thanksgiving. When we leave, that we need to ask ourselves and we need to make personal examination. How do we leave our residence when we go to the place where God is appointed for worship? How do we leave? Do we leave with dread? Do we leave eagerly? Do we leave with great anticipation? Do we leave feeling, I am privileged, I am blessed of God, that I am able to go to the house of God? There are people who leave angrily. They look at their neighbors are out in the yard working, they get mad. And you ought to thank God that God put it in your heart to worship Him. So how do we leave our place of residence heading to the place of worship? Again, still looking prior to the actual act of worship, there was a progression. From verse 4, we see that for 3 days, Abraham moved forward and advanced toward the actual act of worship. For 3 days, he is moving toward the actual act of worship. For 3 days, I believe that Abraham progressed in all the things that we've mentioned so far. How do you know that? Because had he not progressed, he would have turned back. Had he regressed, considering what is at hand here, he would have turned back. But in those 3 days, his awareness of God actually progressed. His sensitivity toward God progressed. His willingness and readiness to do what God would have him to do progressed. His submission to God progressed. His desire for God, his intent, his purpose to do what God would have him to do progressed. For 3 days, he no doubt meditated upon God. He no doubt recalled God's goodness and faithfulness to him. In obedience, he progressed. And he progressed in overcoming fleshly inclinations. So for 3 days, Abraham is traveling toward that act of worship. He was progressing toward the place that God would appoint. And he was progressing toward the very act of worship. For 3 days, Abraham's heart is being more and more moved. His heart is being more and more stirred. Abraham was advancing further and further away from the cares of home. You can leave home without leaving the cares of home. Abraham traveled for 3 days to get to this place of worship. In days when travel was not easy by any means. So he gets further and further from home. Further and further from the cares of home. And closer to the place and to the act of worship. And as one day went by, I believe his anticipation grew. 2 days went by, then three. His anticipation is growing. True worship involves more than a couple of hours and a few acts of preparation. I mean, it would be a huge improvement if people would take just 2 hours to prepare. That would be a huge improvement. But worship is more than just a couple of hours of preparation. True worship involves a progression of heart and soul through the week. Through the week. From Sunday to Wednesday, and from Wednesday to Sunday, there ought to be a moving and a progression toward the worship of God. All through the week, we ought to be building up to worship. How we live our week has a great effect on how we worship, or if we're able to worship. So all through the week, we have to beware of any decline, any moving away from the progression toward worship. I'm talking about public worship, Sunday and Wednesday. We have to beware of any decline. You can enter into a conversation with somebody, and now, just being in that conversation, you have actually declined. You need to get back on track. We must beware of decline or moving away from this progression of worship. Everything is to be building up to the climax of Sunday. Or from Sunday to Wednesday. Many fill their lives with the world, fill their lives with worldly cares. make no progression whatsoever from Sunday to Wednesday or from Wednesday to Sunday. They make absolutely no progression toward the actual act of worship. Hence, when the time comes, they don't worship. Oh, they think they do, but they don't. Because they've lived their life wrong all week. You can live like the devil all week, and then you may think in your mind, well, I do get up Sunday morning and say a little prayer. Oh, my friend, the devil has you deceived if you believe that. That's just formality. That's just blasphemy. But Abraham, there was a progression for 3 days. We need to be progressing through the week toward worship. Can you imagine if every one of us, when we leave here tonight, we're built from that point on, we're building up to the next service. And you just keep building on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. Everyone would come in excited because we've been building up for this for 3 days. And there's anticipation. There's an eagerness. Sixthly, there was faith. During that 3-day journey, Abraham had to believe God to keep going for those 3 days headed toward Moriah. Abraham had to maintain a belief and a trust in God. In verse 4, they arrived at the God-appointed place. And Abraham has been so absorbed with God, so trusting God. And this is clearly seen in his words to the young men in verse 5. He said, I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again unto you. And will come again to you. And in response to his son Isaac in verse 8, God will provide himself with a lamb. I believe that Abraham's faith has been increasing since he left his residence 3 days ago. It's been increasing. It's been getting stronger. And it continued to increase up to the point of verse 10. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. His faith had to increase up to that point. If we're going to worship, prior to worship, our faith needs to be being built up and increased so we can be ready. Seventhly, there was a coming apart unto God. In verse 3, there was the actual leaving of home. And that's more than just a physical leaving of home. Coming to verse 4, they are now 3 days removed from home. And we read that Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. So God obviously told Abraham, Abraham, there's the place. Still afar off from the God-specified place, we come to verse 5. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here. Abide ye here. You stay here. And I and the lad, Isaac, will go yonder and worship. There was a leaving at that moment. You stay here. And Isaac and I are going to go yonder. There was a leaving of worldly associations at that moment. That has to take place if you're going to worship. Not just physically, but mentally. There must, in the worship of God, two important words here in verse 5. Here and yonder. Here and yonder. That's two different places. Here and over there. That's two different places. Here and yonder. There must be a leaving here and going yonder. There must be a coming apart from, and there must be a coming unto God. Here and yonder. Two different places, and they must be kept separate. The problem today is, when it comes to worship, everybody wants to drag in their here to their yonder. You can't do that in worship. Like Abraham, the worshiper is to say to all home and business and worldly affairs, stay here, and I'm going over yonder. And you leave all of that behind. While we go yonder to what? To worship. There has to be a leaving. And there isn't much of that today because people drag in their cell phones. So they don't really leave because they might get a phone call. Well, they haven't really left. They haven't left here. They have physically. But that's the only way they've left. This is so important. We must say to all home cares, business cares, worldly affairs, stay here while I go yonder and worship. And then we read in verse 6, and they, Abraham and Isaac, went both of them together. They left here and went over there to worship. And we see that as they're on their way to worship, Abraham took with him the wood of the burnt offering. He took with him Isaac. He took fire in his hand, that is the means to start a fire. And he took a knife. And it's obvious from verse 9, because in verse 9 he bound Isaac to the altar. So obviously he had some kind of cord in order to bind Isaac. From this we see, what did Abraham take? Well, I just told you what he took. But the lesson is, Abraham took only what was needed in the act of worship. That's all he took. He got to the place. The place was yet afar off. And the only thing Isaac took with him was what would be needed for worship. We need to get a hold of that. That needs to get a hold of us. We don't have to drag in all the world and all the worldly concerns, worldly cares. They can be legitimate, they can be sinful. Doesn't matter at this point. Worldly cares choke the word because the mind is not upon the task at hand, which is to worship. So they left here and went yonder. We are twice told, once in verse 6, once in verse 8, they went both of them together. And no doubt they did so with much thoughtfulness. Proceed to the place of worship with much thought. With much thoughtfulness upon what you're doing, upon the blessing that is yours, to go to that place. Notice verse 9. And they came to the place. And they came to the place. He's been preparing for this. It started back in verse 1 3 days ago. That's what he's been preparing for. And they came to the place. So now he is there and he is prepared to worship. Which brings us, and we'll hurry, to the act of worship. Everything that we have mentioned so far prior to worship continues through verse 9 and verse 10. They're at the place, and Abraham built an altar there. He built an altar. And all, again, he did not do so mindlessly. He laid the wood in order. He did not do so mindlessly. He bound Isaac, his son. Again, with great thought, he laid him on the altar upon the wood. And then Abraham stretched forth his hand, took the knife to slay his son. Abraham, in his act of worship that he is prepared to do, he was willing to let go and give God all. That's worship. That's worship. This act is founded upon a complete renunciation of self. A complete renunciation of self. And a realization and a desire that God is worthy of all. Left all behind, went to that mountain, and was willing to lay down everything. Realizing that God was worthy of it all. Notice verse 11. While Abraham is doing this, while he's in the actual act of worship, he still has an open ear and a ready response to God's voice. And the angel of the Lord called on him out of heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And again, as we said this morning, in verse 1, he only said his name one time. But I believe Abraham was so intent on doing what God called him to do that God said twice, "Abraham, Abraham." But what this shows us is that Abraham, now during the act of worship, still has an open ear to God and still ready to respond to God. And Abraham again said, "Here am I." Abraham heard during the act of worship now. Abraham heard. He recognized and he responded to the voice of God. We do not worship if we do not hear, if we do not recognize that voice, and we do not respond in a positive way. We do not worship. Abraham then, after this happened, he saw and experienced the miraculous provision of God in verse 13. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. Abraham now witnessed miraculous provision of God. In all true worship, there are wonderful things to behold. And I just can't help but believe that Abraham never got that picture out of his mind for the rest of his life, that ram caught in the thicket. I don't believe he ever got away from that. It had an impact And when we're prepared to worship, and we come to worship prepared, that act of worship will have an impact upon us. So in all true worship, there are wonderful things to behold. From verse 14, we see that all of this had an overwhelming impact upon Abraham. He named the place Jehovah Jireh. That is, God provides. It had an impact. It had an impact. It meant something to Abraham. And then in verses 15 through 18, we'll not read those verses, but Abraham felt further assurance of the blessings of God. God reminded him again that he would bless him. In true worship, there will be further assurance from God. But you think about it, what a time they had on that mountain. What a time. What a wonderful time they had that day. And it all began back in verse 1. In worship, is a wonderful time. When we really, truly get down to worship, it's a wonderful time. You leave the house of God and you're mad at somebody, you shouldn't be mad at somebody, you ought to be mad at yourself. Because you didn't worship. You didn't worship. God help us to have a wonderful time and worship. Then in verse 19, and we'll close. So Abraham returned unto his young men. And they rose up and went together, the two young men, Abraham and Isaac, to Beersheba, 3-day journey back. And Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. So Abraham returned unto his young men. As Abraham and Isaac left that God-appointed place of worship and were on their way back to those two young men, what do you think was on Abraham's mind? What do you think was on Isaac's mind? Do you think, well, I sure can't wait to get back home? I don't think so. I wonder what's for dinner. I don't think so. They had one thing on their mind. What had just happened. That's what was on their mind. As Abraham and Isaac, remember, this place was afar off. They saw it in a distance. And when it was afar off, Abraham said to the young men, abide here with the mule, and I'll go, the lad and I'll go yonder and worship. So on their way back, what do you think they talked about? What do you think they talked about? They talked about what happened. They talked about God. I'll tell you right now, you can tell a lot about your so-called worship and what you talk about sometimes 5 seconds after the service. We can tell a lot. So what do you think they talked about that day? And then we read, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba. 3 days. 3 days back. What do you think was on their mind for those 3 days? God. That ram in a thicket. God's provision. Abraham had to say, Isaac, son, God's so good. God's been so faithful. And they talk about that for 3 days back. And I believe they told the two servants. One of the greatest plagues of modern day Christendom is that when the worship, so-called worship service is over, it's over. It's one of the greatest plagues of modern day Christendom. Because I don't find that anywhere in the Bible. It's to have an impact upon our lives. It's to get us excited for the next time. We leave here tonight, and everything we do tonight, everything we do tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, ought to be leading up to what? That next public meeting. To worship the Lord. And as you get closer, the anticipation builds. Oh, that God would help us to be a people, of worship. We learn much from Abraham. And there's much more that's here, I'm sure. But we learn much about worship from Abraham. Was Abraham perfect? No. Was his worship perfect? No. Is our worship perfect? No. Our worship in and of itself is unacceptable to God. But we worship through Jesus Christ, and He presents it, and it's acceptable. But again, I remind you, there is much more said in this account concerning prior to worship than the actual act. Than the actual act of worship. It is so sad. So sad. But almost, I try not to listen, but almost every Sunday, you hear people within seconds after the service, within minutes, talking about what they're going to do. How sad. That's like saying, you might as well put a sign, I've gone through the motions and I'm done for today until this evening. Because that's all that happened. We ought to leave here talking about what transpired. Did you see what so-and-so was wearing? Did you hear what that preacher said? Did you see how he did that? And on and go and just pick everything apart. No enjoyment. God help us to be a people. To be a people of worship. God help us to want to worship God in a way that is pleasing to Him. Real, true worship. Again, during this week, check your progress. Something happens that's going to be a hindrance to worship. You need to take care of it. You need to get that taken care of so you can be prepared. We need to determine, I'm not going to let anything, I'm not going to let anybody interfere with my worship of the Lord. And just keep moving through the week in that direction. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.